For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. It was a bright summer day on the 8th of June, 1967. The United States Navy intelligence ship, the USS Liberty, was peacefully sailing on the crystal blue waters of the Eastern Mediterranean. It just so happened on that very day, the government of Israel was finalizing its preparations for the invasion of Syria, which was planned for the following day. The intelligence ship's full-time mission was the interception of all radio communications in the area. So a decision was made by the Israeli government that the USS Liberty presented a threat to the secrecy of their war plans. On that fateful day, Israeli warplanes and torpedo boats attacked the Liberty with a merciless barrage of torpedoes, machine gun fire, rockets, and napalm. They attacked her in wave after wave, again and again and again. They blasted a 40-foot hole in the side of the ship with their torpedoes. When the Liberty failed to sink, they sent in helicopter gunships and machine-gunned the lifeboats. The clear intent of the Israeli attackers was that no American be left alive. The attack took place in broad daylight and lasted for over 2 hours. Only when the Sixth Fleet had sent rescue aircraft did the attackers finally withdraw. All through the assault, the ship was flying a clearly visible and brand new American flag. Israeli reconnaissance planes had been tracking the Liberty for 5.5 hours prior to the attack. 171 American sailors were casualties, and 34 were killed. The official story put out by the Israeli government was that the attack was a mistake, and an apology was issued by Israel and accepted by the U.S. No action was taken against Israel for attacking an American ship and killing American soldiers. A conspiracy of silence surrounded this tragedy, and few Americans have ever even heard of it. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Moorer, and Secretary of State Dean Rusk stated publicly that Israel deliberately attacked the Liberty. Rusk stated in his memoirs, quote, "I was never satisfied with the Israeli explanation. I didn't believe them then, and I don't believe them to this day. The attack was outrageous," close quote. Nevertheless, the media downplayed the affair, which, had it been perpetrated by any other country than Israel, would have been a cause célèbre and possible grounds for war. The controlled media told us that the attack lasted only 5 minutes and that it was followed by an immediate apology and offer of assistance. Survivor James Enns Jr., who was on the Liberty that terrible day, recently stated, quote, "The official lid on this story remains almost as tight as the day it was first applied," close quote. Many survivors, soldiers, scholars, and patriots have had their doubts about that official explanation. And in 1991, their doubts were confirmed. Evidence released that year by the U.S. Embassy in Beirut included an intercepted radio conversation of an Israeli pilot who communicated with his base on that day, quote, "It's an American ship," close quote. And his headquarters ordered him to continue the attack. Now, there is no doubt at all. How is it possible that so great an atrocity has been covered up? Such a cover-up would have to involve large numbers of individuals at the highest levels of the U.S. government, as well as the cooperation of the major news media of this country. Such a cover-up did occur, and an investigation of the strange relationship between the State of Israel, the United States government, and the U.S. news and entertainment media will reveal a key to the understanding of many of the problems that currently plague our nation. Understanding this key will lift a veil from your eyes, and you'll finally be able to see the political power structure as it really is, instead of how the commentators and network executives want you to believe that it is. We're going to give you that key right now on American Dissident Voices. The State of Israel can truly be described as a gigantic, swollen parasite fastened on the American people. Most Americans are not aware of how much money is poured from the U.S. Treasury into Israel. According to former Congressman Paul Findlay, quote, "Each year, U.S. aid to Israel exceeds that given to any other country. Since 1987, direct economic and military aid has annually totaled $3 billion or more. In addition, financial arrangements worked out solely for Israel bring the total to about $5 billion a year. This does not include such generous programs as the $10 billion loan guarantee granted Israel in 1992. U.S. law provides for the termination of all aid, economic and military, to any nation that develops nuclear weapons or engages in a consistent pattern of gross violation of internationally recognized human rights. For years, the U.S. government has been aware of Israel's development of a nuclear arsenal and its persistent human rights violations. But no president or Congress has ever taken steps to terminate aid as required by law or even reduce it." Close quote. According to information obtained by West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd, the total direct aid to Israel, again, not counting many special deals, loans that are never paid back, tax breaks, etc., by the end of 1991, added up to $53 billion. That's 53,000 million dollars. Adjusted for inflation, that figure would be much higher. From 1979 on, the amount of money directly given to Israel totaled $40.1 billion. The amount given to Egypt, which in a way can also be considered aid to Israel, since it is essentially a payoff to the Egyptian government in return for their subservience to Israeli domination, is the second largest amount given to any recipient. You may be surprised to learn that the total aid given to these two countries, Israel and Egypt, is more than that given to all other countries combined. Now, none of these figures include special low-interest loans made to Israel, many of them guaranteed by the U.S. government. The $10 billion in loan guarantees made by U.S. taxpayers to Israel is just one example of these loans. Now, some of you might not know just what a loan guarantee is. What it means is this: if the government of Israel can't pay back its creditors on time, then the U.S. taxpayer, That's me and you, my friend. Foots the bill. According to Paul Findlay, quote, since 1985, all U.S. aid to Israel has been a grant, meaning that not a penny of it has to be repaid. And when Israel pays interest and principal on loans given before 1985, it does so with U.S. tax dollars. This curious process began in 1984 when Democratic Senator Alan Cranston of California sponsored what became known as the Cranston Amendment. It stipulates that economic aid to Israel each year will be at least equal to its annual repayments, principal and interest, of its debt to the United States. In the wry words of then-Secretary of State James A. Baker, in testimony before the Senate in 1992, we can always pay ourselves back with the money that we appropriate for Israel to do so. The effect of this amendment is to guarantee that Israel will always receive enough U.S. aid to cover its debt obligations. In actual practice, Congress always awards Israel funds far in excess of these obligations. No other country enjoys such an arrangement. Close quote. This great swollen parasite thrives not only on our money, but on our very life's blood itself. The Gulf War was fought primarily to protect Israel's continued military dominance in the Middle East. Iraq was never a threat to America, but it was a potential threat to Israel. Saddam Hussein fell into a trap when U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, April Glaspie, told him that Iraq's longstanding claims to Kuwait were merely an inter-Arab matter and would not draw a negative U.S. response if acted upon. You all know what happened after Hussein fell for that trap. Perhaps you recall the absolute hysteria in the controlled media when Iraq shot a half dozen or so missiles, mostly duds, at Israel during the war. Few Americans bothered to calculate, to come up with the fact that an equivalent number of bombs and missiles were hitting Iraq every few seconds. The controlled media cynically used us by making an appeal to our patriotism and implying that anyone who didn't go along with the slaughter wasn't supporting our troops. Americans died. Americans were wounded. Americans were crippled. All for the interests of a certain foreign nation. The leading supporter of this twisted crusade in the U.S. Congress? Top Israel booster Stephen Solars. The Gulf War is just one instance of many. Americans died for Israel in Lebanon, too. You know, Lebanon provides an interesting parallel with the Gulf War. All Iraq had to do was refuse to instantly comply with a UN resolution demanding that they withdraw from Kuwait, and shortly thereafter, a rain of bombs and missiles was falling, and over 100,000 Iraqis were instantly converted into cinders as they retreated across the sand back into Iraq. But in 1982, Israel brutally invaded and occupied Lebanon. No smart bombs rained down on Israel. In fact, Israel still occupies southern Lebanon, and hardly a peep of protest against this violation of a sovereign state's borders is heard. Israel's history is a history of territorial expansion, and some Israeli political leaders talk openly of Eretz Israel, which means Greater Israel, incorporating much of what is now Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. What you may not know is that while Iraq committed the New World Order crime of failing to obey one UN resolution fast enough, Israel has steadfastly refused to obey not just one UN resolution, but an incredible 69. Israel's actions have brought outrage from a majority of the UN's member states on 69 separate occasions. They have condemned Israel for the destruction of Arab villages, for the murder of innocent women and children, for making war on neighboring states, for refusing to withdraw from invaded and occupied territory, for killing protesting students, for killing civilians who were protesting being expelled from their homes, for a transcontinental bombing raid against Tunisia, and for dozens of other violations. And on 29 other occasions, UN resolutions with real teeth in them, calling for Israel to withdraw from stolen land and allow self-determination for the Palestinian people, among other things, would have been adopted, but were vetoed by the one dissenting vote of the United States. When it comes to the exercising of any kind of real power against those who violate UN resolutions, it seems that some countries are more equal than others. Israel gets away not only with an expansionist foreign policy, but with repeatedly and endlessly violating the most elementary human rights of her subject peoples. Although Israel's PR men would have us believe that Israel is an island of Western values in the Middle East, the truth is quite the opposite. Former President Bush stated in 1992 about our relationship with Israel, quote, "This is a relationship based on a shared commitment to democracy and to common values," close quote. But according to Congressman Paul Findlay, quote, "Israel practices as state policy a number of measures that are illegal in the United States and other Western countries. These include assassination, kidnapping, expulsion, detention without charges or trial, land confiscation, and collective punishment, not to mention Israel's long-standing practice of espionage against the United States, its principal benefactor," close quote. The power of the Israel lobby is so great in this country that former President Jimmy Carter was prompted to say, after he left office, of course, that no politician dared to oppose its demands because to do so would be, quote, "political suicide," close quote. They take our money. We fight and die in their wars. And since both political parties are in their pocket, the American people don't have any choice in the matter. How do they do it? They can do it because they are rich, they are organized, they are united, and they have the power to suppress criticism through their control of the American mass media. Most of all, though, they can do it because we let them. The primary Israeli lobbying organization is called the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC for short. It is unquestionably the most powerful lobby in Washington. It coordinates the activities of over 100 pro-Israel political action committees. AIPAC has an annual budget of $15 million with 50,000 dues-paying members and offices in 9 U.S. cities. If a congressman or senator toes the Israeli line, AIPAC can direct thousands of contributions into his re-election campaign. If a representative becomes rebellious, however, all that cash will flow just as swiftly into his opponent's coffers. The New York Times, which can hardly be described as an anti-Israel institution, described AIPAC in 1987. Quote, "AIPAC has gained power to influence a presidential candidate's choice of staff, to block practically any arms sale to an Arab country, and to serve as a catalyst for intimate military relations between the Pentagon and the Israeli army. Its leading officials are consulted by State Department and White House policymakers, by senators and generals," close quote. At AIPAC's 27th Annual Policy Conference in 1986, AIPAC Executive Director Thomas A. Dines revealed that AIPAC's influence was so pervasive that Secretary of State George Shultz had vowed to, quote, build institutional arrangements so that 8 years from now, if there is a Secretary of State who is not positive about Israel, he will not be able to overcome the bureaucratic relationship between Israel and the U.S. that we have established. Close quote. One State Department official was quoted as saying, quote, we used to have a two-track policy in the Middle East, considering the interests of both sides. Now, only Israel's interests are considered. Close quote. And it isn't just campaign money that's involved. As readers of Who Rules America, our in-depth research report on media bias and control in America, well know, forces friendly to Israel and her international interests have effective control over the major television and radio networks and the major newspaper and magazine publishing groups in our nation. That is the primary reason why these news sources nearly always take an internationalist, leftist, America last position. A strong, confident, nationalist America might not be friendly to alien control over so many of our institutions, and so the media bosses do all they can to make sure such an America never comes into being again. Naturally, their services are available to ruin the political career of any who would oppose Israel or to boost the image of Israel's friends. Today, the American government and our media of entertainment and information are literally helpless prisoners of this foreign power, the power that lies behind the nation of Israel. This sad state of affairs exists primarily because most Americans are too fat and too happy to bother themselves about the future of America, too willing to take the easy road of believing the lies delivered by the smiling newscaster as he reads his script. But some of us are willing to do the research to find out what is really going on and to take seriously the responsibility which that knowledge places on our shoulders. We say, and as long as you are willing to support this broadcast with your voluntary contributions, we will continue to say, not 1 cent to Israel, while a single child or old age pensioner of our people goes to bed hungry and cold. Not 1 cent to Israel, while a single one of our able-bodied men is without a job. Not 1 cent to Israel, while she violates our laws, kills our soldiers, and steals our military secrets. Low-interest loans, loan guarantees, and loans paid back with our own money to Israel? Hell no! Let's give those loans to our own people, to real traditional Americans, to our young men and women just starting out and trying to raise children who will be a credit to their pioneer ancestors, to our farmers who are losing their farms to faceless banks and corporations. Where are the low-interest loans for them? Here in rural West Virginia, and maybe in your part of the country as well, roads could be paved. Hospitals and schools and libraries could be built. Credit could be extended to our entrepreneurs. But money is tight. Despite the highest taxes in history, our government is broke, and we are criminally mortgaging our children's future to pay yesterday's debts. Under such conditions, it is the height of insanity, if not treason, to be sending our money to Israel. Since Americans have been so unconcerned about their nation and unwilling to do the hard and dirty work of maintaining control of their government and their media, a vacuum has been created. A vacuum that the special interests have been only too happy to fill. and the Israel lobby is the mother of all special interests. The parasitic organism has grown so large and so malignant that it now cannot be removed except by radical surgery. Our political system is literally paralyzed by the parasite, so we must now look to ourselves to regain our freedom. We must awaken our fellow Americans to their peril. This effective control of our government by a foreign power is the greatest peril that our people have ever faced. There is a new book which has provided much of the source material for my program today. It has gathered together in well-organized form all the essential documentation of the power of the Israel lobby. And it reveals the hidden side of the state of Israel, the side that the controlled media don't want you to see. It is by former Congressman Paul Findlay and is entitled Deliberate Deceptions, Facing the Facts About the U.S.-Israeli Relationship. Deliberate Deceptions will demolish the fallacies that prop up the illegitimate power structure in America today. Congressman Findlay is retired from politics and has no partisan axe to grind. If you are a thinking American who is concerned about the dangerous downward slide of our nation in recent years, you need to read Deliberate Deceptions. When read in conjunction with our research report on media control, this meticulously documented and easy-to-read book will become a key to understanding America's decline and a weapon in the fight to take our country back. Deliberate Deceptions is yours for a donation of $20 or more to keep this program on the air as our radio offer number 17. Just send the largest donation you can afford, a minimum of $20, to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. And remember to ask for radio offer number 17. Together, we can make America free and great once again. Please support the educational work of this radio program. Send $20 or more today, and you will receive not only this superb book, but also our illustrated, patriotic book, tape, and video catalog, listing over 300 items, many of them not available anywhere else. And you'll also receive the research report I mentioned earlier, entitled Who Rules America? Ask for radio offer number 17. Enclose $20 or more, whatever you think my efforts are worth, and write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Until next week, at this same time and same spot on the dial, this is Kevin Alfred Strom saying, keep on thinking free.
For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.
Thank you.